Thank you for joining us once again on Inside Jobs, the podcast where we meet creative leaders and try and find out something about what makes them tick. Brought to you by IHAF, the leading professional association for in-house agencies, and ExpressKCS, the content production provider that's at the ready to meet in-house agencies' creative production needs. Now, this episode, I have the extraordinary pleasure of meeting Jan Loomis, a journalist turned creative leader. Jan has a huge and disparate team to manage, and I'm really looking forward to hearing how she got into her role, as well as how she manages it day to day. So Jan, thanks so much for joining us on Inside Jobs.
Thanks, Robert. And you made me smile. Give me a big smile when you introduced me. It's very exciting to be a part of this and to be able to share my knowledge and hopefully gain knowledge from others.
Well, thank you very much, Jan. Well, that's definitely the intention. But I'd like to start off by asking you to share what it is you specifically do and for whom.
So I actually am an employee of a company called Realogy, and Realogy is traded on the stock exchange, and Realogy is the largest franchisor or holder of real estate brands. So currently Realogy has 6 real estate brands under their umbrella, and you will recognize them in the United States and overseas, but it's Coble Banker and it's Sotheby's. We have also Better Homes and Gardens. We have ERA. We have a company called the Corcoran Group, and we have Century 21. So there's 6 different brands. I am a part of Realogy. I specifically work primarily on the Coble Banker business, which is our largest brand. And we give creative services to the Coble Banker companies that are affiliated with the Coble Banker family, as well as we have a company-owned division that we give specific services to as well. So, and I also, our creative team also will do periodically creative assets for the other brands. So we just finalized a program called Real Vitalize that all of the brands that I just mentioned take advantage of. So we did all the creative assets that they can go to market and give to their agents to actually give to the buyers and sellers of homes.
It sounds pretty demanding, and I'm looking forward to finding out more about it later on in the podcast, Jan. But can you share with us, where did it all begin for Jan Loomis?
Well, for myself, I started out, I am from a small town in Ohio, and I actually was adopted years ago by my parents, who adopted my brother and myself. And we grew up in a very loving family with adopted parents, because they, not that every family isn't very loving, but they particularly had a challenge trying to have a child back in the day. So they wanted to make sure that we had all the support and all the advantages that they could give us. And I took advantage of that. So great
upbringing.
That's
why you didn't go into performing the blues then, obviously.
Right, exactly. Right. So basically, and I went to a small liberal arts college in Ohio, Ohio Wesleyan. And I was always interested in communication, also English. And I ended up in the journalism. They had a journalism specifically print at the time, but they did have a broadcast journalism, which I ended up funneling into and graduated with a BA with on the broadcast side.
Now, and was that with the intention of being being in front of a camera and
yes,
everyone seeing you? It was a kind of, was there an egotistical element to that then?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I think journalism is fascinating, and it's changed so much, you know, in today's world of social media. But yes, back in the day, I did have a desire to be on air. I did do some on-air work. It's not quite as exciting as you might think. But, I thought, oh, I want to be an anchor. But in reality, I ended up being funneled into my first job, which is a newspaper reporter for a daily newspaper back, you know, when newspapers were kind of ruled the world. And it was very exciting because, you know, you in a newspaper environment, you get to, on a daily job, you're cranking out stories every single day, and you're on, you know, it's very adrenaline packed, as journalism
is. This was in Ohio, though, yeah? This wasn't, because you were in New York for a short period, which must have been quite an eye opener for you in the 80s.
Yes, I did like an internship in with NBC in New York City. Yeah, it was cool. I mean, it was not specifically in journalism. It actually ended up being, it was kind of, they have a segment at NBC where they actually submit awards for anything that they do so that they can get awards, which just like the IHAF awards that we are submitting.
But not so prestigious.
Yeah, yes, exactly. But they enter all those so that they can get each of their programs, get notoriety, and obviously attract more talent, et cetera. So, but it was awesome. It was a great experience. So, but yeah, I just, I was a reporter for 4 years there, and I covered several murder trials, which was very exciting. A lot of investigative journalism. It was really fun, which I love to cover Dateline and watch Dateline true crime kind of stories and podcasts. So I guess that was my first love is there. So
right. Okay. So working for the newspaper, the cut and thrust, and as you say, they were really ruling the roost in that era, the late '80s, early '90s, wasn't it?
Right.
So, but what happened there then? Because there's a journey you went on from journalism.
I actually ended up doing some on-air work with the main station in the city, Columbus, Ohio, which where I'm from, and it's the capital city of Ohio. And I did some on-air work, but in reality, I decided that, you know, back in the day I was making like $16,000 and I needed to bring in more income. So I ended up actually going into PR, and I did find a love for public relations. And in conjunction with that, I think, you know, a lot of people that have marketing degrees or marketing backgrounds, you know, you can go from journalism to marketing to PR. There's so many facets of marketing that's, you know, exciting and gives people opportunities to grow their career. And then I ended up in just more of a general marketing role at the end, where I've stayed for the past 25 years. So
That was where then? That was with Coldwell Banker.
Yeah. So I ended up, when I was actually in Columbus, and I worked for a planning commission, which was a government position. And that's where I was doing public relations. I ended up moving to Cincinnati, Ohio, which is another large city in Ohio. And I ended up doing a general marketing with PR associated. And then it was a developer. And from there, Coldwell Banker actually solicited me to come work with them and head up their Cincinnati division, which ended up merging into their Ohio division, which ended up me actually being asked to move to our Florida operation. And then we actually broke apart our regional centers, which a lot of companies, I think, you go from having regional centers to local operations to national to back to geo center. You know, it changes, you know, every 4 or 5 years. But we ended up now we're in a national, our marketing is done in a national segment with a lot of local marketing team members in the field. So that's how we're set up today. And I sense of now head up one of the national divisions. So like I said, I've been with the company for 25 years, Coldwell Banker, and specifically under the Realogy umbrella. So.
Right. So let me see now. You started out as essentially a reporter working on crime, I think.
Right.
And moving into PR, quite a standard kind of progression. And then across PR into marketing. And then obviously your wings unfolded within marketing. And
correct.
That became more of your... And you'd call yourself a marketer now, specifically?
Yes. Yes. And now I specifically... I headed up one of our regional basically areas of the country. And that was the whole East Coast down to Florida. And then we went national. So I was more of a general marketer. We had several different, you know, product, all kinds of different things under our belts. But now we've sectioned it off. So we have specialties. And my specialty now is heading up our creative asset department. So anything that lends itself to the creative element, and everything does, is done by my team specifically. So we've kind of reorganized to that degree. And that's where I am now. I've been since about 2017. So.
And has this been a sort of 25-year apprenticeship, or have you actually gone away and studied marketing and so on, you know, in fits and starts along the way?
I think, you know, it's probably in fits and starts along the way. You know, you certainly learn a lot in your particular industry and in your particular role as a marketer. I think that, you know, when you have a good concept of how your organization runs, it's always very helpful, because I think everybody is focused on efficiency and speed in this day and age. And longevity can always be, there's positives to longevity and negatives. One of the positives, I think, of longevity, and from my standpoint, is you can move fast in the organization. You can make things happen. You can fix things. You can solutionize. There's just a lot of things that come about that having a long team can help. But you always want fresh ideas, so it's always great to bring newbies into the organization as well. So
that was a very quick summary of what I think was really a quite a storied career. But on the other hand, it does bring us up to where you are. So can you describe what you're actually managing? And what are the objectives of the team you have? And then explain a little bit about how the team is built and how it achieves those objectives.
So one of the things that we struggle with, and I've been on a lot of the IHAF calls, committees and different things like that, that I think we all struggle with as marketers, is there's organizations always want to come to us, not only to provide the tools that they need to be successful, but they come to us for solutions. And oftentimes they come to us to fix things, always in a crisis. And it's always more and more labor. Can you just do this? Or can I put this video out about this? We need to explain this. And there's often a lot of that after the fact, you're catching up. And I find on listening to different people, and we had the same struggle, we still do, but we were getting better at it. We did not have a way to basically explain what we did and also what it took to get that done. We were just expected to do it basically for free.
And this is when? Are we talking about 2016 or so?
Well, basically, it was happened in 2019, at the end of 2019.
Oh, okay. Relatively recent then.
Yes. So I was struggling with, you know, how do we do this? I mean, our organization, and I think most organizations, are not really in favor of just continuing to hire and hire and hire. You want to hire smart. You always want to be able to use freelancers and you know, temporary help or whatever it takes. But you want to be able to also hire smart when you need to. And that's always a challenge.
You were a marketer looking to essentially achieve your marketing objectives. And typically people would hire agencies to do this.
Right. So So what happened in our organization in particular, so the brand Cobalt Banker does have a really great agency out in LA. And that agency would do a lot of the big work. Like we do a TV commercial, just did a big thing during, did a big TV commercial during March Madness, Guiding You Home, and it got all kinds of awards. So they would generally do the TV work. But as you know, and we all know as marketers, there is so much other work that has to get done. And an in-house agency will afford you a much cheaper option. So where my blended rate for my services are $77 an hour, we're going to spend $176 on an agency cost. So there's always, and I don't discount agencies because I think it's great to have an agency on record, but I also think, you know, you have to get the day-to-day things done. You have to get a flyer done. You have to change a logo. Yeah. You have to do all those little things, but they add up. You know, we do about, we average about 600 or 700 jobs every single month. That's only on one side of our business. We average about 730 jobs on the other side of our business. So we're looking at 1400 jobs every month. So that kind of work, that mid-complex work, and then higher campaigns we do too, has to get done. And so we are pretty much like the in-house agency for the Cobalt Banker, brand. So that's so, but we needed to really find a way to show our leadership who is asking us to do different things, what it costs. What are the timelines? We just can't do everything that comes in. It's particularly sometimes in the timelines that are asked. So that was the real emphasis, to get a structure in place. And we have like a hybrid chargeback model that we put in place in the beginning of 2020. We actually did not even kick it off officially until mid-year to 2020. And obviously we're going through the pandemic with everybody else. But we soft launched it in the middle, like July 2020, and we've been basically creating reports and talking about it every month to our lines of business throughout the rest of 2020. And it's now official in 2021. It's, you know, out there. We do monthly calls. We have reports that you know, we give out, so our lines of business understand where they are and what hours they're using, what they're getting charged, and things like that. But it's given us a way to basically control the madness. And
well, these reports, you were very kind. You shared a little of that with me earlier on. They're extremely, first of all, they're very polished looking.
Thank you.
But they're also very thorough and very detailed. Tell me about how you came to produce those and how they've evolved and what benefits they've had.
Yes. So the reports, they are very detailed. And One of the things that we did a few years ago, probably in 2017, we actually brought Workfront on. And if you don't have any sort of a system to process jobs and process your work, it's nearly impossible to have an efficient system. So there's a lot of different programs out there, but we've been big Workfront fans and have found that to be great for us to actually do our work. So basically everything is done through Workfront. The way that I get my information is my entire team tracks time. And we set up,
you know, get them to fill in timesheets.
They actually have to kind of manually do it. There's not a really great way to do it in Workfront, but yes, they manually basically put in their time and track their time in the system.
Let's just stop right there just for a second. We're going to come back to this, but this is a question you get a lot, which is how on earth do you manage to motivate people to complete their timesheets accurately?
Well, and I will tell you, at the beginning, I got a lot of pushback because people felt like they were being micromanaged and that I did not. And the other thing was, is they thought like, are you trying to eliminate me, basically? And so, you know, I tried to explain, and I think over time it takes repetition, but the only benefit to tracking your time is to benefit you as a team, because otherwise we're not going to be able to hire. I cannot prove that we are over capacity to get work done. So there, I can't turn work down unless you are accurately tracking your work. So it just took repetition. And I think as we've hired based on that model, the fear of I'm going to eliminate you has gone down.
And so, again, how many people have you got in total doing this and across how many time zones?
We have 88 different people, and everybody, I think everybody is in the States, but we're everywhere from Hawaii all the way to the East Coast of the United States. So,
okay. All right.
Yeah.
So you, let's get back to the reports then. So you're good at collecting the data, which is awesome.
Yes. And, you know, I mean, data is data. So sometimes people don't even want to look at the data. So you have to explain the data and what it means. But what it does give to us is we can basically tell every month what we are having coming in as jobs. We also set our SLAs, which is, you know, our service level agreements, based on our different complexities of workflows. And then we also track that. So we try to never be over 5%, meaning that we are always hitting our deadlines almost 95% of the time. So we track that. We track our rush requests. We tracked our, you know, we track all of these different things. And then what we do is we actually track based on our line of business. So we have 26 companies across the United States. And then we have, but beyond that, then we have over 2,000 other affiliate operations that we also give services to. But we primarily track the hours to these 26 companies that are company owned. And they all have a set of hours that they use, that they can use basically to use our services. So they can see every month what they're using, what they haven't used. So if they want to do a local Chicago campaign and they want to do a, which they're doing right now, a billboard campaign, all different assets that they're doing, they know how many hours that they have available to work with my team. So that's what we track. And we track that every month with them. And we talk to them about it. Now, our company-owned operations, which is what I was talking about with our Chicago company, they are actually on an hour basis. So I attribute hours to them based on the size of the company, the number of the real estate agents they have. There's like a formula. So they are a very large company. They cover, they're a very big city, have a lot of home sales. So they get more of my hours than perhaps a smaller company that we have. So that's how we do it on that side. The other lines of business that we actually give services to is our overall brand, Coble Banker. And then I also give, like I said, some of the realty companies, and they're actually charged a dollar amount. So they're on a retainer. So I get actual money from them. So, which is nice. But basically that money just really covers our costs of hiring people too. So the organization, that's an easier sell when I'm covering the cost of a lot of the positions that we're hiring as well. So.
And of that team, how much is what you might call high-end creative, tier one creative?
You know, that's interesting you would say that, because I was thinking about that earlier. So probably the majority, we have really three complexity levels. Low complexity, which is a two-day turnaround. We have a mid-level, which is a six-day. And then we have a high concept, which is what you're referring to, which is we try to 10 days, which it depends on how complex it is. If it goes more than 10 days, But the majority of, I would say 80% of all the jobs are going to fall into that moderate, that mid-range complexity. Like, I need a social media campaign. I need this. And so it's going to be not a huge high complexity, but then we'll probably have the other 20%. And some of it's low, but not a lot of low complexity. The other 20% are going to be high level to 30% are probably high level campaigns that different people want to have in their local marketplace, or we're doing for the overall organization. There's a lot of different reasons that jobs come into us.
Well, this brings another question to mind, is that you have, I remember again, you're telling me you had potentially 80,000 agents out there plus international clients, and you interface with those, and you can explain how in a minute, but I'm also curious to know, how on earth do you get consistent briefing from that you can actually work with?
That's all. Yeah, it's a good question, because I think creative briefs are always a challenge. And I actually just challenged my team, my creative team, to actually put together a blog for our internal team to brief people on how to do a better job with their creative briefs. Because, you know, even myself putting in a creative brief, if I'm doing one for our team, sometimes I'm like, ugh, I just want to skip over and like just tell them what I want them to do. But then I'm like, no, I need to be disciplined. And I need to explain as much as possible so that they can start some of the work. But it is a challenge. I think creative briefs, you're always going to have that stress between the account team and the creative brief and the creative team trying to figure out what they want in order to turn things around in a timely manner too. So it's, you know, I think that's always a work in progress.
Do you have any automation as well? Do you have tools that you give your agents that they can access and create their own unique artwork or whatever?
So we're basically, how we work is, because there are so many agents, we have two teams. We have a national team and we have what we call an agent team. So the agent design team actually does give personal branding to all of our agents. They do pay for it. So we have a platform that we've built where our agents come into the platform. They actually, we know that our agents, when they come in, we can identify them through our data. So we already self-fulfill a lot of the form fields that they have to fill out. So, but they fill out the other things. So if they want to do a custom logo, and we do a ton of, it's our number one, actually requested asset is custom logo. If they want to do a custom logo, we do have a form field, and then we have a little thermometer that shows you where you are in the process. But you also go through and you tell us what you like. Do you like modern? And there's an actual visual of, do you like a modern type of logo? Do you like this? There's questions that you ask, that we ask of the agent before we get started. And then our, you know, project management team puts that into a job. It goes to one of our designers specialty is the logos, custom logos. And then we do five designs for every single logo. And that's how we get started. So that's how our agent side of the business actually gets done. So that's the most exciting side, because it's really difficult to, there's very few organizations in real estate that have figured out how to deliver agent services.
Not just in real estate. I mean, there's plenty of those types of organizations around, especially in finance. And
interesting. Yeah,
it's this is a common challenge.
Yeah. So we figured out, we've got a platform, and we actually have, it's working really, really well. And it's taken us about a year and a half to get it up and running. But that's when I consider the agent side. We call it the design concierge, because it's an actual platform that we built. So we're feeling a lot of stress right now from a employee standpoint, trying to make sure that we have enough people to work on all the requests, because some of these are packages that have literally 13 different parts of the job. So you may be ordering a disruptor package, and you have like 13 different things you have to, it's one job coming in, 13 different assets. So it's a lot, but there is a cost to it. So that does control it to some degree. So, you know, we charge $50 an hour for our agents. Our prices are based on $50 an hour. So we do underwrite that. Our actual true cost from an agency standpoint is about $77, but the company does underwrite some of that, because we want to make sure that our agents are getting the tools they need to succeed. Because if they're not selling real estate, we don't have a business model.
Their success is your success. I mean, very tightly done. What fascinates me, Jen, is that to an outsider, you really have the most complicated and disparate set of things to handle, and yet by focusing on numbers and process, you seem to be very, you seem to have it under control from what you're saying. And is that the key to it? Is it measuring and ensuring this tight process? Adherence?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, I mean, I have a creative team, so we don't like process, a lot of
what
us.
What does that mean?
Right. So, but I also, fortunately, I like process, and fortunately, my production team and my production team that actually manages all the reporting for the in-house, they like process, and our project management team likes process. So they've actually created discipline around an area that we were very undisciplined around. And I'm not sure all of our, probably our designers, if they listen to this, will be like, they don't like it sometimes because they just, you know, they want to have that interaction with every single client, but we also have to move fast. So we do need to have our clients come to us and give us information before we get started. And so, yeah, it's all about that. And the only way the data works in our favor is I look at every job role every month. And, you know, I track the utilization rates weekly, because that's really the capacity models by job role is really what you need to look at. So you know what you need to hire. But that's also, you can be in arrears easily. Like this month, you know, we've got the, so you have to kind of look at the utilization rates to understand where you're really feeling a strain on resources. So, but that's the only way. Yeah. The only way that my finance team, they are and you know, it's hard to blow away a finance team. They're actually blown away by, we think like them, and we basically put a value to the work that we do, which is never done before.
To get finance on your side, right?
Yeah, I mean, you have to.
Once you've done that, they're friends for life, right? Because
exactly.
They don't have to worry about you, and they can go worry about someone else.
And they understand your model, and they understand what you're doing, and they've approved when you hit that mark, that when you ask for resources, that there's credibility to it. You're no longer having to prove yourself. So that's been a huge win for us, and it didn't happen overnight. So it's been a lot of work getting that in place, but you have to live and die by that, or you know, you will die. Your resources will.
Yeah. So what's the next challenge for you, Jen?
Right now we've made a commitment to roll out our Design Concierge, which is our agent side, to all of our franchisees across the Coldwell Banker organization. And that is another, they have 2,900 offices that we are rolling out, and also internationally, 40 different countries. So that model is being launched officially to the rest of the organization this quarter. And I have 100 companies that have lined up ready to move on it. So I'm a little nervous, but we want to make sure that we have that agent platform for personal branding out to all of our affiliates by the end of the year. So that's one of our big goals. Some of our other goals is just, I think as a creative agency, everybody struggles with trying to find time for your creatives to be creative. So our goal is always to be 15% under capacity and in all of our job roles. And we rarely hit that. So what I'm trying to do is create different forums that we can keep the creative juices going. So I don't know if everybody took advantage of the Adobe, since the virtual event was free last year, and they have another summit coming up right now. So we're all attending virtually the Adobe Summit, which was always kind of cost prohibitive. We're attending that. We've created an Imaginarian, which is based on the movie of the same name, that basically a way to inspire creativity. And we're really trying to build that in every month, so our creative team is just not focused on getting that job done and out the door and meeting the SLA and moving on. So that's a real challenge always, is to try to make sure that they're not, their juices aren't dried up.
It's been a particular challenge with lockdown as well. And I'm hearing this not only in the US, but in the UK as well, that there are creative leaders who are really casting around for ideas as to how to creatively stimulate their team so that they're not getting stuck in a rut, quite honestly. So it's fantastically exhilarating to hear you really making positive steps in that way, Jan. So Jan, you clearly got the whole thing completely buttoned down. I hope your private life is a complete mess, because I can't believe that.
Well, I don't want to fool anybody. We're not completely buttoned down, but I do feel like we had the foundation set. And like I said earlier, when I've been on some of the IHAF meetings and I've been in some of the chats that we've gotten onto, which have been great to brainstorm, I think we all struggle with this ability to
prove value and not get overwhelmed and hire when you need to hire and show why. Like, I think that's a big thing too. People just think that they snap your fingers. I don't understand why you can't get me a logo the same day. Yeah, if I had nothing else to do and I didn't have 500 other people waiting in front of you. But, you know, so it's always telling that story. And I think one of our challenges are, and when you talked about what are we focused on, one of our challenges are we get so busy that we forget to sell ourselves. And so that's really one of the tasks we've talked about this year. How do we get better at selling ourselves internally to our own organization? So I've challenged that. We started putting out a quarterly, what we call a sizzle video that really shows some of our creative work. We're also going to build in monthly to our lines of business calls some of the work we feel most proud of so our lines of business can see what we're doing as well. So I think that will help, but that's always a challenge. We almost have to make it a job because otherwise it's difficult for us to focus on us.
I really want to thank you so much for your time and joining us on Inside Jobs, Jen. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Robert. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks to you, the lovely listener, for joining us, and to Jen Loomis of Coldwell Banker for telling us so much about her creative operation. Now, that's a lot of brands and people to keep happy. But Jen has proved that with tight process and regular collecting of the numbers, you can actually sail a ship right through all of that very serenely. Also, thanks so much to Emily Foster of our esteemed partners, IHAF, and my producer, Amy McNamara, for making all of these things possible. Also, Prerna Chabra at Express KCS for handling the podcast editing so beautifully. If this is the first episode of Inside Jobs that you've heard, then a very, very warm welcome to you. Please do take a little moment now to visit our website at ijpodcast.com to see our ever-growing back catalogue of episodes. There's something there for everyone, I think. Well, you can also subscribe to our newsletter there, and please look me up on LinkedIn, say hi, and press that LinkedIn button. It's always great to hear from people who are running and working in and around the in-house agency world. Till next time.